I won't let my active psoriatic arthritis joint symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. Tremfya guselkumab is proven to significantly reduce joint pain, stiffness, and swelling in adults with active psoriatic arthritis. Some patients even reported less fatigue as assessed by survey 1 week prior. Results may vary. Tremfya is taken by injection 6 times a year after 2 starter doses at week 0 and 4.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
Hey parents, Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list, teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity. Set up chores and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then, learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
Ready to rock. Look at you.
Here I am once again, blown it into pieces. Can't deny it, can't pretend. What song is that? Why is it in my head?
Behind these hazel eyes.
Okay, hitting the high notes. Okay, Harmony Boy.
I'm a singer, baby.
All that and more coming up on today's pod. Hit the music.
Here we go. Let's get these questions from the DMs.
Yep.
That's what I heard. So, what do you want to tell you?
Woo! Big, big news in the That's What I Heard world. We have a telephone number. Have you ever met somebody with a telephone? I'm acting like no one's ever had a telephone number in the history of the world. I'm the first person to have a voicemail. We have a number, guys. It is 347-722-1487. Hit the celly. Leave me a voicemail. We'll be playing them throughout today's episode. Just give it a try. You know how in the old days, people used to make the numbers into words like 1-800-MATTRESS, 1-800-CARS-FOR-KIDS.
Yeah.
So I tried to take our numbers and make...
Frex.
Well, no, I didn't really... I just tried to work with the number they gave us to make like a word for it. Mm-hmm. So here's how you guys can remember our number. It's 347... Pack one Gus. So if you're sitting there going, how many Gus's do I pack? One Gus. 347, pack one Gus.
Oh boy.
That's the best I could do.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good.
347 and pack one Gus. 3477, pack one Gus. And that's PAC, folks, not PACK. Okay.
Right.
One Gus. Because one has no letters. Anyway, I'm very excited about that. Actually, should we check in? Do we have any voicemails? Do you want to play our first, very first voicemail in the box?
I got a couple lined up here. First voicemail, here it is.
All right,
we're cooking with gas. I love this. Nothing like, I love this. I'm leaving a voicemail as I drive. You get me in my absolutely phone call energy. Oh, God. All right, hope this works. Miss you, Perks. Yeah, I'll be back. All right, peace.
That was, of course, the great Sebastian Canelli.
Yeah.
Missing from the pod for many weeks, handling some personal and professional business, of course. We always save a seat for Seb.
Always, yeah.
Anytime Seb wants to come back, we always have a seat for Seb. Let's see what's going on with me. Oh, have you heard about the solar eclipse? Michael?
Yes, I have. I wasn't sure. I thought that was rhetorical.
Now this pendulum has swung the other way too far. Now you're too afraid to speak.
I think we yes. Just trying to stay out of the way.
Yeah. Here. Big solar eclipse. So when you listen to this, it will have just happened yesterday. But I'm actually, many people wouldn't guess this about me, but I'm a solar eclipse enthusiast, and I am driving to Ohio on Saturday. and I'll be gone for 5 days to go see the eclipse. I have to drive to the total, to the path of totality, it's called. Because you could see a partial view of the eclipse from many different places in the United States. But I don't want a partial view of the solar eclipse. I want it all, folks. And that's why I'm driving to Cincinnati, Ohio. And then I'm going to stay in Cincinnati, Ohio on Sunday night. And then it's not, Cincinnati is just outside the path. And then Monday morning, I will drive into the path. I'll drive into Indiana, into the path of totality, where I'll experience, where I will experience 4 glorious minutes of nighttime during the day. Now, I went to see the last solar eclipse we had, which is in 2017. I drove to the Smoky Mountains. Me and Drew did this. And this is like our thing, I think. We'll be a solar eclipse couple.
Got it.
It's an interesting type of couple to be a solar eclipse couple. But it was just such an amazing experience because everything goes quiet. Darkness falls, middle of the day, darkness falls over America. Everything goes completely quiet. The birds stop chirping. It's just the strangest experience that I had ever seen nature-wise. Not that I have too many nature-related experiences, but it was really, really fucking cool. We just drove out to the Smoky Mountains, and then we were like, all right, where do we watch this thing? We like went to Walmart, bought some like flotation devices, and then we pulled over on the side. Like we saw a little creek that ran under a little bridge, and we just pulled the car over, took our little flotation devices, and went out into the little creek and watched it. It's pretty fucking sick.
Mike? Yeah, that is pretty sick, man.
Thanks for backing me up on that.
You're welcome.
It's pretty fucking sick. It's pretty fucking sick. So I don't know what I don't know if social media is just bigger now than it was in 2017 or if I just wasn't paying attention, but I don't remember really much hoopla leading up to this last one. But now I'm seeing like every state is declaring a state of emergency. They're saying like biggest traffic day of all time. I don't remember any traffic last time.
Yeah, they're going a little out of their minds with this right now. I guess it's dangerous to be on the road.
What?
Is that what I've heard?
No, I think they're saying that there's going to be so many people on the road, it's just going to be so backed up.
Oh, got it.
So I'm telling you right now,
do not
have a heart attack on Monday. Do not need an ambulance on Monday. Yes, because so many people are going to be traveling
to Ohio
to the path of totality.
Right.
Now, parts of upstate, like Montreal, Austin, Texas, parts of upstate New York, Ohio, Indiana. Like, I don't know. There's this whole line that goes on a curve to the country. But there'll be other places you can see it partially.
Right.
But I don't want that whack-ass shit.
No.
I want that full-ass solar eclipse. So, yeah, people are... state of emergency, people are bugging out to like make sure you have supplies. I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? I do not remember any type of traffic last time.
It's wild. And I know there are schools that are closing, there are businesses. It's too much. It's too much.
It's too much. I remember the funniest thing about last time is I remember they made a big deal. Like, don't look directly at it. Like, you have to buy these special glasses, which mm-hmm. I have. And the funniest thing was Trump just on the lawn.
Yeah.
Staring up at the sun.
Fucking idiot.
It was very funny though.
I forgot about that.
That was like all time like height of Trump like fear.
Yeah.
Too. And then everyone then just him like staring at the sun.
So insane.
Blinken said, I don't even want to talk about this. You see this? Blinken just did a press conference and he said that Ukraine will become part of NATO eventually.
I know that they've been talking about that for a while now.
But he just said it straight and plain, looked dead in the camera and said, Ukraine will be a part of NATO. Now, I know politics and world affairs is not really our wheelhouse, and that's what I heard. But boy, did that send a chill down my spine. Like, oh, you just want to fucking die. Oh, I see. Oh, you just want to get fucked. Oh, you just want to fucking die. Okay. All right, brother. Blinken. Dumbass. What's wrong with people?
I don't know.
Let's play another voicemail.
For trouble, though.
Blinken's a cuck bitch. Let's play another voicemail.
Okay.
What we got?
There we go.
Well, hello, Frex, who actually is Emma. It's Mom, and I just want to say good luck today. And I also want to say thank you for how great you've been this week. So little Frex isn't that tough. She's really a big old softy. Love you, honey. Bye.
Wow. Huge call in from Mama Frex.
She dead named you, though.
Isn't it? So that's what, how sweet is she? So that's what I mean when I say, like, where does my voice come from? That woman sounds British. She sounds borderline Mary Poppins.
She has such great elocution, I assume, from acting.
She went to acting school.
Right. They beat the accent out of you.
That's what she says.
Yeah.
That was a nice little voicemail. I took my mom to get her hair buzzed this week.
Yeah.
Because there's like the chemo, so her hair is starting to fall out. Mm-hmm. So she's kind of bugging out, like, what do? Where do I go? Blah, blah, blah. I go, let me handle this. I call the salon on my block, which is kind of like a trendy salon. I go, listen, this isn't really a haircut, but is there any chance you could buzz my mother's head? Because she's going through chemotherapy. And they were like, yeah, let me call you back, actually. And then they called me back. They were like, we would love to do it. The owner will do it. $50. Like, they were only charging like $50. Mm-hmm. And then, so I brought my mom in. These people were so fucking nice and so wonderful.
Great.
Shout out to Salon 87 on Graham Avenue. They have a customer for life. It's not exactly what you think, you know, like a young, trendy salon. And then, you know, just like a woman getting her head buzzed with a few loose tears rolling down the cheek, yelling, I look like my father.
Oh, that's heartbreaking.
Actually, first she goes, I look like a lesbian. Because, like, first they buzz it.
Yeah.
And then they, like, shave it down even more. And then she's going, I look like my father. But actually, it wasn't even as sad as I thought it was going to be. Because I think because they were so, so sweet and nice. Mm-hmm. Shout out to them. Actually, I think my mom looks pretty fucking cool with this look. It made me want to get a buzz. It's kind of fucking cool.
Yeah.
Like, I get, she's, like, a beautiful woman. She's always been beautiful. And obviously, hair is more than just like a look. It's emotional too, you know. Uh-huh. But I don't know. I think it's pretty fucking cool.
Yeah.
You ever have a buzzed head?
Not since I was young, very young. But after a while, I was too attached to this, you know.
Yeah.
A lot of guys my age don't have hair, so that's true. I can't be buzzing this off.
You are lucky. Do you have any signs of balding or no? You have a bald spot or anything?
No, they have been lucky.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, my hair started thinning, and now I take 6 medications. Like, and I'm like, yeah, it looks cool, Mom. Why don't you just go with the flow and appreciate that you're alive? 6 different medications at the earliest sign of thinning.
So, would you get a buzz?
I don't know. I mean, if I had to, I would embrace it.
You kind of look like an NBA player a little bit.
Do they have buzzed heads?
There's like a certain era where like Jason Kidd.
The dudes. Yeah, the dudes. I'm ready to name who I think is the overall pound for pound hottest NBA team.
Team?
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think I know who it is.
The hottest, all in all, team in the NBA is historically one of the worst teams in the NBA. It is the Washington Wizards.
What? That's your pick?
100%. I watched them last night. I go, pound for pound, like the youngest, best-looking crew if you put them all together.
Who is on that
Kyle
team?
Kyle Kuzma. I'm not saying they're good players.
No, I know.
Kyle Kuzma, Jordan Poole, Denji something.
Yeah, Georgie.
Something,
Dang.
Something Kisper, something, something Vuva, and then a bunch of other boys.
Yeah.
Pound for pound, look them up. Why? Who do you think I was going to say?
I was thinking Cleveland. No? Donovan Mitchell.
I can barely get a breath. Okay. Do you know how much I hate the Cleveland Cavaliers?
No, I hate them too. But
if I were to actually rank my dustiest NBA teams, they would be number 2.
Okay.
The Cleveland Cavaliers.
Well, I've had George Niang has been
He's
in
a
here.
Cutie, but that's one person.
Donovan's a handsome, you know, like all-American
looking boy.
Pound
for pound, look up the Washington Wizards. They look like a group of guys waiting in line at Union Pool.
They are young. Okay. They are a young team.
Like those are those boys. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Those are those bad boys. Yeah. Those fuck boys. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, fair. I can't even think of another team that's like.
I mean, the Knicks obviously, are not. You don't think the Knicks, they're not.
No, enhanced, no, no. That's not their thing. The Knicks are hardworking, sincere, honest people.
Right.
Actually, the reason that I love the Knicks is now is the same reason that I hated them at first. I said there's no star. Like, no one has any swag. Nobody looks like a star. Nobody looks like they're out, you know, partying. Nobody's got that style. Now that's the same reason I love them, because what I've come to understand is that why the fuck would you want your favorite team out partying, acting like Hollywood?
That's right.
Why the fuck would you want that? You want boys who love to practice.
Yep.
Who love team, who love the team spirit.
Yep.
That's what you want from your team. God forbid you're a Washington Wizards fan. So let me tell you, I think those boys just fuck 24/7.
That's why they have 7 wins this year.
Literally, that's why they're historically the worst, because they're out there slinging dick all over the District of Columbia. Also, I didn't even realize, I thought when I always heard Washington Wizards, I thought it was Washington like the other one.
Oh.
I never thought of it as an East Coast team.
Yeah. Yeah, they're very forgettable. They really are.
Well, let's
they might be hot, but
let's
boy,
break
are they
it
bad.
Down. I mean, the name Wizards.
Yeah.
Did you even have a chance? You think the Wizards are going to beat the Bucks? Are going to beat the Heat? You know what I mean?
Here's the thing, though, Frex. They used to be the Bullets, which was
badass. What do you mean? That's badass.
Yeah, that's super badass. But they changed it because Washington was like...
gun violence.
Yes. So when they were the Bullets, they were good.
Damn.
They had won like championships in the 70s, I think.
What? Okay, when did they change the name?
I think they were the Bullets until sometime in like the late 80s. And then I think that was right around the time. Probably around like the... yeah, sometime in like the early 90s, I think they became the Wizards.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's tough. That's rough. Have they ever been good as the Wizards? I guess they had Porzingis for a while.
No, they've never
been
good.
But he was injured.
They've had never John been Wall good. For a little bit.
That, also, their that outfits like, okay. are goofy as fuck.
Yeah. Yeah, they're goofy.
They look like little revolutionary, they look like Revolutionary War tour guides.
Yeah. Again, but when they were the Bullets, they were cool.
I bet they were cool as fuck.
They were cool. It looked great.
And now they're hot, and thank God they're hot, because they have to do something other than play basketball.
Yeah.
Julius Randle out for the season.
Yeah, disappointing.
Fuck him. You know what I'm saying? Fuck him.
I feel you.
I don't think we need him to win. Okay, so Julius Randle of the New York Knicks. Folks, we've gotten into basketball talk earlier than usual today.
Yeah.
Julius Randle of the New York Knicks has been out for like a few months trying to get better from a little shoulder, oopsie daisy, boo-boo. Now they said today he'll be out for the rest of the season. He's not coming back. But when I started watching the NBA last year, it was Julius Randle like choking in the playoffs. So to me, I don't need him in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. I don't need that energy in the playoffs. But this year he got a lot happier and I liked him a lot more. He was smiling, hanging out with his kids, like being a positive energy on the court.
That's what happens when you play in a good team. Everything food changes. Starts to taste better. Mm-hmm. You know, the temperature is nicer. Everything's better, you know?
Maybe that's what it was. So many players, like when I started watching last year, I saw them in this like weird moody era.
Yeah.
So I didn't like them. But now I see them happy and positive, and I like them so much more. For example, Luka Doncic. Mm-hmm. When first thing I saw of him was him being all emo, crying at the press conferences, talking about I hate basketball.
Yeah.
Now he's like goofing around. He's always pranking people. He's always like trying to hit on the refs. Now this I can get behind.
Right.
Oh, big news for our listeners as well. We will be doing a Draft Queens NBA playoffs bracket. It'll be free to join. I don't want any, because I know like a lot of people are like, oh, I don't know anything about the NBA. That's fine. It's free to join. You have nothing to lose. Once the playoff teams are set, I'll put up a link for anybody who wants to play. You just make a free account and pick your teams and we'll go through all the playoffs together. We'll keep like a leaderboard. There'll be prizes. I think there'll probably be prizes for the person who wins and the person who loses. Because in this bracket, just like in the NBA, winning is great and losing also has value. Mm-hmm. Being the biggest loser, you get Wembanyama. If you suck badly enough, you could get Victor Wembanyama generational talent. How about another voicemail? What do we got?
There we go.
Trex, big game this Friday. Who do you like? Caitlin Clark, Paige Beckers.
Perfectly on cue with our topic.
Yeah, I know. It's like you planned it.
How do we do that? How did it become so perfect? All right. So women's college ball. Now, I just watched that Elite Eight. Is that what they call it?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Elite Eight game. Now, I didn't know anything about these people. Obviously, I'd heard that Clayton, what's this bitch's name?
Caitlin Clark.
CC. Yeah. Obviously, I'd heard people are loving her. But I watched that game, Caitlin Clark versus LSU, and immediately I'm just checking out the vibes of the teams, and I really wanted LSU to win. And then I see on the screen what has now become my Roman Empire, Coach Kim.
Oh, yeah, you love Coach Kim.
Coach Kim Mulkey, coach of LSU, is my Roman Empire. Now, what the hell is going on?
Are you asking me what's going on?
How did I miss her? I've never heard of her.
I mean, listen, I think that there's so much more of a spotlight now on the women's game, and it didn't really exist until the last like year or two, thanks to Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese and all these players. So I don't know that she's probably a prominent figure in the women's game, but I didn't know who she was until a couple weeks ago.
I mean, I saw that clip of her going, somebody's got to have guts.
Yeah.
She's just in these like wild outfits.
Yeah.
Sequins, tassels, like blazers, crazy shit.
Yeah.
Running up and down the side of the court, bugging out. Like in a way, Tibbs could never.
No.
Tibbs could never have this type of fucking class. And she's just yelling, somebody's got to have guts. And then I saw that interview where she goes, I don't know, I got COVID or something. Might be COVID shit, but I ain't testing. And I was like, okay, I'm like, this is compelling. This is compelling.
Well, that's the thing. I think that's the thing that the women's sport has missed forever is you haven't had these like fucking wild characters, and that's what builds drama.
Right.
Heroes and villains.
But then I looked this lady up, Coach Kim, and she's been around for ever. She's the highest paid coach in women's college ball, I guess. So like,
is she paid higher than Gino?
That's the guy from UConn, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't know, actually. I thought it said highest paid women's coach, but maybe not. Maybe it said highest paid woman coach, because Gino's a dude, right?
Right, yeah, Gino's. Yes. What? Gino's a dude.
Are you thinking women's college ball? There's not a woman named Gino?
Fair. All right, fair point. Fair point. Gino Amara.
I'm going to go ahead and say there might be one or two women named Gino in women's college ball. So I've opened a Word document, and I've just called it Coach Kim. And I do believe that I will be writing a movie.
About Coach Kim?
Yes. Or just a Coach Kim-like figure.
Right.
Where did this woman come from? And how did we get to this point? She's gone on from... We're from Louisiana, honey. We like diamonds. We like diamonds. We like ball. With my players. I will... This is the other one. She gets on and she looks straight in the camera and she goes, I will fucking sue the Washington Post.
Yeah.
I guess the Washington Post wrote a story that she was kind of like...
A racist?
Did they say that?
I think that
I thought they said she was just like a bitch.
I thought... Well, one of the quotes that I saw was about them saying that like... LSU... I don't know. Forget what I just said.
Well, I mean, this thought changes I had if I'm writing a movie about her or not. They'll tell you. But then I read a quote, you know, one of the LSU players, Flaujay, her mom was like, Coach Kim is the only coach that I would trust with my child. Because I know that when she leaves there, she'll make her a woman who's ready for the world. Mm. I say, goddamn, Coach Kim. I need a little fucking Coach Kim. And guess who's going to play Coach Kim in the movie that I write? Me.
Of course.
Although, really, the part is pretty locked for Amy Sedaris.
Yeah.
Or Amy Poehler. Either of them would crush that Coach Kim role. How did I get on this? Oh, Someone asked me a question, which I didn't answer. Who do I like, Caitlin Clark or Paige?
Paige Buecher, yeah.
Buecher? Okay, I call her Paige Buckets. Do other people call her that?
I don't know, but that's a good nickname.
I'm just going to say it straight and plain. Caitlin Clark, not for me.
Why?
Boring.
Interesting. People think, okay.
Angel Reese? I'll watch that all day.
Yeah.
A little fucking flair. Caitlin Clark, to me, very boring.
Even with the shooting?
Well, obviously I respect that she's probably the best ever at it, at that level. But part of I think what's going on is that the women's game is being elevated. And with that comes the ability for people to just go, it's okay to say, that person's not my favorite, like we do with the men. I just sat up here and called a bunch of the men ugly. Uh-huh. And part of being on the same level of raising the sport, the women's sport, is being able to say about them, yeah, I don't like that one. That one's boring to me.
I think it's a fair point.
Now, Paige Buckets. I'll give Paige Buckets a second look. She's UConn, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
I think Caitlin Clark will probably win, though, because she has the narrative momentum. And I think that plays a major role in sports, narrative momentum.
Right.
That's what I learned when I first watched sports 1.5 years ago. I watched the World Cup. And the momentum, the narrative momentum was with Messi.
Right.
Messi's last cup, will he finally get one?
Right.
And boy, when he got that cup, that's when I was hook, line, and sinker. I was like, I'll bet on this till the day I die. Now I'm going to start talking like Coach Kim. I'll bet on that till the day I die. I think this is Caitlin Clark's narrative arc.
To win?
To win.
To win, yeah.
Well, when this comes out, we'll know if she had won or not.
Right. But
why? What do you think?
I think basketball, especially college ball, truthfully, usually the coaches are the stars. And Gino is arguably the greatest women's coach of all time.
Who's Gino, though? I don't know nothing about this man.
Gino Amorata.
You can see I can't stop talking like Coach Kim now. I don't know nothing about this man. All right, tell me who he is. Do you know?
He has the most wins in the history of the college game. And he coached UConn. They went on like, I think there was like 3 years where they didn't lose. He just won every game in a row. Like, he's just like a mastermind, basketball mastermind. So I don't know. Caitlin Clark seems like a true stud and very hard to stop. But if anybody's going to do it, it's, you know, the greatest, but arguably the greatest coach ever.
But isn't that what the narrative is? This little runt from fucking Iowa.
Yeah.
He's going to go up against the legacy team and the legacy coach.
Uh-huh.
And slay the dragon.
Well, and she says that she wanted to go to UConn, but she didn't get recruited there.
Really? Yeah. So she's got a bone to pick.
She's got a chip on her shoulder.
She got a bone to pick with them boys. Interesting. Very interesting stuff. So who do you want to win?
I don't know that I care, to be honest.
Okay, that's sexist.
But
I can say it. You can't.
I mean, probably UConn, just because Well, listen, it's the Big East. I grew up with Big East basketball.
Okay.
UConn was like a powerhouse when I was a kid, and they're a powerhouse now in both men's and women's basketball. Like, it's, you know, they're like the last Big East powerhouse that exists. So, you know, you got to kind of root for your conference.
So it's a regional issue.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a regional thing. Okay. And Gino, Italians helping Italians, you know.
So now it's racial.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, I see. No, I get it. Look, there's many different reasons people get behind things.
Yeah.
Now, you know what I'm hearing?
What?
I heard that, so in the men's All-Star weekend this year, they did that three-point contest between Steph Curry and Sabrina Ionescu.
Yeah, yeah.
Who's, I guess, in the WNBA.
Yes.
And it was actually the best segment of that whole weekend.
Yes.
Because All-Star weekend is a fucking joke. Everybody knows that. Mm-hmm. Everyone's just there to swing their dicks around and party, which I support. Completely, but it's not an interesting game to watch. But this little three-point contest they did actually was pretty compelling. So now what I heard is that next year they want to do Steph and Sabrina, and then Klay Thompson versus Caitlin Clark.
That'd be cool.
How about that?
Yeah, I'd be into that.
I think it's a mistake.
Oh, yeah?
Yep.
Why?
Here's why. Steph Curry is still respected enough and doing well enough. He don't need to win that game. He don't need to win that contest for his ego, I think. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I think. Whereas Klay Thompson is a shell of what he once was. And they're always crying on that team.
Mm-hmm.
And I just worry that, like, he will cry if he doesn't win. Whereas Steph Curry, he could lose and you won't worry about that.
Mm-hmm. So you think Klay
will cry.
Got it.
Which, okay, fine, but it might be uncomfortable for the audience.
Yeah. I mean, I think if there's one thing that guy can still do, it's shoot. But
Klay Thompson? Why is he always kicking chairs over then?
Well, I think Klay is becoming like...
He's always crying.
He is crying a lot now.
So what's going on? Listen, I mean, I don't know the guy. I only met him.
They're at the top of the mountain, and now they're not as good as they used to be. So, I mean, I get it. It's just like aging, you know? I think Klay is my age, or around my age.
Mm-hmm.
And we've talked about this before with the mics cracked. It's, 34 is when things fall off a cliff.
Oh, yeah.
That's how it seems.
And I've been to the bottom of that mountaintop.
Right. So, I get it.
I got to make a confession before we go to break.
Yeah.
I listened to a podcast today where Tony Robbins was the guest,
mm-hmm.
and I'm interested.
Okay.
In getting involved in the Tony Robbins way of life.
He seems to help people.
I don't know much about it, but I just remember him from like the 90s, right? Doing all these speeches.
Yeah. Well, did you ever see the doc on him?
No.
It's fascinating.
Is he a charlatan or is he the real deal?
It seems like he's it's pretty real because he's like a self-help person, but he does seem to like get in people's faces. Not all the time, but I think a lot of people can't help themselves because they just have like really bad self-images.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that like it seems like his method is more about getting you to believe in yourself, that you can like do some of this shit that you're putting off, which doesn't feel like snake oil the way some like Gary Vee.
That's what I'm saying. He sounded pretty good.
Yeah.
And I didn't even listen to this podcast on purpose. Like it just came up on a different podcast I was listening to.
Yeah.
And I was like, huh, he makes some interesting points about changing your mindset and stuff like that. So this might be the last year over here for me. I'm moving down to Tampa and I'm becoming a Tony Robbins kind of girl.
Fix your life.
Yep. He goes, what is it? He says, fix your story. No. Mm-mm. Change your story, change your life.
Yeah.
So he was talking all about like the stories that we repeatedly tell ourselves about ourselves. How many times do we repeat these negative things about us that are like self-fulfilling? This isn't like new information, but it just, when I heard it, I was like, huh.
Yeah.
Something to that. Anyway, folks, 347-722-1487. That's 347 pack one Gus. We're going to go ahead and take a break. And when we come back, we're going to have an interview with the amazingly hilarious Brittany Carney. See you after the break.
That's what I heard. That's what I heard.
All right, everybody, welcome back from break. In the studio with us, we have such a huge treat right now. Her new special, That Is My Horse, is out now on YouTube. Please welcome Brittany Carney.
Hello. Right. Wait, where should I look? Here.
That's you.
Okay. Kid, hi. Yeah, that's you. Thank you so much for having me.
Welcome. Huge, huge special out now. Now, when you call it That Is My Horse, mm-hmm. is it like, hey, that is my horse?
Oh, or is it? That's a great question.
Yeah.
Because I have a bit that's like overly elaborate where it's like basically that sentence, it's about that sentence.
Mm-hmm.
But emphasizing different parts
that,
of it.
Okay, that was actually...
So you're actually speaking to something really true to my core or whatever. Or whatever the thing is.
It can mean so many different things.
Yeah, that's kind of in general what that bit is about. And it's truly nonsense. But the context of the bit that I named the special is that years ago, I was watching in Japan a like German language show to teach people in Japan German, like conversational German, right. Like something you might see on PBS here,
right.
You know. And anyway, that was the sentence that they discussed. Like, that is my horse in German. Right. But it was for a Japanese audience. And I've always been thinking about it. And then last year, I want to try to write something about this. So anyway, the answer is...
That is my horse.
Yeah, it could be that is my horse. Or yeah, yeah.
Totally.
So...
What was that dumbass movie with Michael Myers where they were like... where he's going, you put the wrong emphasis on the wrong syllable.
What is that?
It's like a dumb movie about flight attendants.
It's called A View from Above.
Yes. Huh? Yes. Oh. Yes.
A View from Above.
Really?
Yeah.
And he, you put the wrong emphasis on the wrong syllable.
Yeah. That's in my head.
It'll
from like
stay
the,
with me till the day that I die.
It, late 90s, early 2000s reference.
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah. I love that.
Now, I was watching some of your stuff. So you grew up in Japan.
Yeah.
So what can you tell me about that? Like, what's the vibe? Tell me everything.
The vibe is, well, my mom is half, but was born and raised there. She's half black, but was born and raised in Japan. So then, she and my aunts, like my grandfather, who was from Maryland, but was stationed in Japan for World War II, like married a Japanese woman, my grandma. And so then, had my mom and his two other daughters all go to university in the U.S. So even though they were like born and raised in Japan, they all went to college in the U.S. Okay. Where respectively, they each met my dad and my uncles, right? So like my mom met my dad going to college in Philadelphia in like the 70s. And so ultimately, and they stayed together for a long time. And ultimately, when they got married, she had gone to business school at Stanford. So she was all geared up to like work in finance back in Japan, really. Right. And so she got offered a position with an insurance company in Tokyo. And I guess told my dad, like, well, I'm going to go. So you can come with me. So he was this random black guy in Japan in the 80s, like the mid 80s. And so that's kind of so basically my mom. So I was born there because she had moved back. She had moved them back, essentially. And my younger sister and I were both born there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, I guess... It's a crazy question, Big. So what was it like growing up in Japan? Because you've only grown up in Japan.
I have a lot of feelings about it. And we moved to the U.S. When I was in the middle of ninth grade. So it was like
culture
horrible.
Shock a little.
Yeah. Damn. And we had been going, obviously we had been going to the U.S. Since I was a little, like, you know, visiting relatives in Philly and Annapolis. And like, I remember like going to camp or whatever with my cousins in America, in the U.S., but I never really felt like so American. We even spent a bit of time there when I was in sixth grade. Mm-hmm. And then finally, when we moved there for good, like in ninth grade, it was a really big culture shock. And I was really it was really tough.
Yeah,
I was really lonely and I was like very quiet. And I'd come from a small English language, but like small international school in Tokyo where I was for eighth. In the first half of ninth grade. So I felt like very connected to my little friends and very used to this one environment. Yeah. And then we just, you know, it was a big public school outside of Philly. So it was a really big culture shock.
And American teens are.
Yeah.
Terrifying.
I like evil. Felt so alien, I think. Yeah. I don't think I ever realized how alien when I think about it, I would like cry during lunch, like the whole thing. But then sophomore year, I think through theater and then also more broadly and other good friends. So ultimately I like assimilated, but ninth grade was tough.
But you think theater was a big, big way for you to get
like the classic, you know how like, okay, I was kind of lonely, I think, and having a hard time. And so then my mom had me visit the guidance counselor at the school who would be like, well, what about track? And I'm really the least athletic person. So I tried track, but it was like really, I think eventually I hurt my knee, which felt like a, oh, phew, you know, like,
totally.
Yeah, yeah. So then I tried it for like half a semester, but it just really was not my environment. So then ultimately I found theater and I think that's what helped me feel like more settled into that environment and more like I belong, but it took a minute and we had been moving around a little bit. Like when I was a kid, we lived fourth, fifth, and sixth grade. We spent in Singapore. When I was in fourth and sixth grade, we lived
Singapore.
Yeah, I got from my mom's job, and that was like so that. But I was a child, I guess, because like I remember the summer that we were leaving Japan, which was the summer after third grade. So I remember that a bit, and I remember like I don't know. As a kid, moving to somewhere different is still kind of like everybody's a little bit more innocent and it was also still an international school in Singapore. Mm-hmm. Like it was Singapore American school. So anyway, a lot of families were used to moving around. That's the key thing. The thing about the US in many places, not everywhere obviously, but like definitely where my parents still live now, everybody knew each other from kindergarten.
Yes, right? Of course.
Yeah. Quickie, yeah. Yeah, 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 exactly. Mm-hmm. So that took some adjusting. I turned out okay.
I feel like you did pretty good.
Arguably.
And do you think that theater was the pipeline to comedy? Like when, yes. When did you go, yes. Actually, comedy?
Yeah, I really think it was, but indirectly. So I was in DC and I was in DC for graduate school. And okay. I had like done theater in
graduate school for what?
For public history, which is like museum shit. So wait, I worked in
okay,
the...
Okay, we got to get back to that. Okay,
cool. I have a lot to say about that, unfortunately. Good. So I worked in the museum field for a long time before I moved to New York. But so then I was in DC. I was going to grad school for essentially like, public history, like museum stuff, and then focusing on early American history. And I was working at this Civil War museum where I had to do a bunch of really interactive tours that were like discussion oriented. Mm-hmm. And I'm a shy person, but I loved how I felt doing theater in college and high school. And I like did a lot of theater in college. And so then anyway, whatever. I was like already becoming better as a public speaker in this random Civil War Museum job.
Yeah.
And then as I was winding down in my graduate program, there was like a comedy festival happening in D.C., and my friend was like, let's go to this thing. And I didn't really have any sense of, I wasn't somebody who like followed stand up as a kid or a teenager. So then, but I had other interests that were comedic, like Monty Python or whatever, okay. But not like American stand up. Gotcha. So I was just kind of like, I was like, whoa, this is so interesting that it's really individualized. And so then I got really into watching open mics in DC, like
just like watching.
Love. They were like creeping on these totally. Free bar shows and dragging friends in and out of graduate school who were like busy, you know. But I really fell in love and I was like really intrigued because I was interested in the performance aspect because I would see people work on the same joke a few times and I was like, this is interesting. They're performing. Some of this reminds me of theater, but it's very different. Mm-hmm. And then eventually a friend was like, you should just sign up for an open mic. And I was like, what? I don't know how to do that. Yeah. And I did. And
did you ever start, like when you were doing the tours and you got interested in comedy, did you ever start trying to really make the tours funny?
Yes. That was something that I realized kind of, later. Yeah, I really did.
Like finesse it.
And that was like, honestly, like that job was half a decade out of my 20s. Like it was like, wow, I probably worked there from when I was like 24 until, yeah, I worked there for 5 years, 5 or 6 years. So anyway, the point is that like I had in that time frame applied for more senior positions that would be more like desk work or behind the scenes writing work. But I never got those, I think, because they were like, we don't know about her, like attention to detail or whatever. Yeah. But I felt really beloved at this museum because of the way that I approached the tour part.
Right.
And I had really worked on those like so much. And I really tried to make them funny, but kind of by accident. Like I just thought, oh, you can add a line here that consistently gets a laugh. And then later, as I was learning about stand up, mm-hmm. I realized that I was like, then they were kind of like building each other out because mm-hmm. I was still at the moment still really involved in this museum.
Yeah.
And so they had me do these tours for like, Congress like representatives and like VIP guests and educators that came that weren't just visitors because they were like, we like the way that Brittany does.
You were the star tour guide.
Yeah, that's honestly kinda cool. And I really worked on that, so I feel like I can say that. So then I never got any of the other jobs that I applied for there, but they were like, she's the person that it creates like a meaningful experience. So anyway, I think that really helped me grow as like an adult and a communicator and a public speaker, that job. Yes. And then as comedy moved forward, it helped me at that job. And then I think that job like created a foundation for me in stand up.
Yeah. And also it's like that you were becoming beloved at the museum for this thing. It's like, oh, let me become beloved in another community for this thing.
Yeah.
Wait, I had something felt important to ask.
Oh, sure.
What Congress people and what VIPs did you get for the tours?
Wait, I did a, hang on. I did a,
who do we got?
Okay, Newt Gingrich.
Okay, Rich. Yes, Gingrich. 90s icon.
Why am I forgetting? Oh, Ted Cruz. I did a tour for Ted Cruz.
Okay.
There was a tour that I did where...
Now, did you crush in front of Ted Cruz?
I kind of did.
Okay, that's
because
cool.
The thing about these, like, this kind of, like, that kind of, you know, they're just, like, politely listening to whatever, like, young, you know, whatever. But but I would, like, really try to give it some... Like, the tour, like, what it was about, essentially, was about... like Lincoln and like the ideas that he processed, because the whole point is that the museum is where he spent his summers in DC. So like during the, it's like his like Camp David, or he would escape the White House to
it's
go
an
like,
old ass museum.
Yeah. 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 Well, the house is old ass, but the museum is relatively new. Damn. So it's kind of innovative and like a little bit woo woo. Mm-hmm. So the point is that when these people came,
there's some crystals and some Lincoln.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And it's like, it would be like an actor that played Lincoln's voice would like play from the walls, and then we would like respond to it. And I think I'm pretty like, they would just think I was like this little like weird, like, you know, they'd be like, oh, this like girl has a septum ring. And at the time I had a buzz cut essentially. So I think I always surprised people like that,
right,
in that I, cause I was studying history in terms of how to talk about different perspectives and like how to raise questions about historical themes. And so the way that I handled it, I think always like sparked the interest of those kinds of visitors.
Right. So you're a history head.
Yeah.
I love history too.
Cool.
So important.
Yeah, it's cool. It's the human experience. It's awesome. What I think is really sexy about it.
It's the best. It's the fucking best.
Yeah.
All right. Do we want to take, I have more questions.
Okay,
maybe
cool.
We'll do it. Maybe we'll take a call. What do we got, Mike? Let's see what we got.
Hey, first time, long time. Cool that you set up the chat. Curious, what do you do to like pregame for your shows and like get yourself hyped up for the spotlight? Anyway, looking forward to hearing you.
All right, so thank you. By the way, first day of our voicemail. Thank you to the callers. And okay, so yeah, what do you like? What's your pre-show or pre-creative endeavor? Like,
cool. Okay, I have a few thoughts.
Go.
If I'm a big coffee person. I love coffee, and I can drink coffee at any hour of the day. Okay. Really.
So how many a day, just as an aside?
Like, I feel like...
How many coffees a day, you think?
Like, I feel like, oh, like 2 to 4.
Good. God bless.
Do you drink coffee?
Yeah, well, I have a little bit of a problem. I'm iced red eye. I drink iced red eyes.
Oh,
so I had to put those down. So it's like cold. It's a large cold brew with 4 shots of espresso.
Damn.
And half and half.
Do you?
I'm off it now, but then I would start hitting the vape and I would wonder why I wasn't feeling so good.
That's like I forget for 10 days to drink water. Yeah. And I'm like,
so I had to get off those. But yes, so no, you don't drink coffee.
Okay.
I'm trying to do tea. So right now I'm doing like black tea and ginger peach black tea. I'll make it at night, like in a mason jar. Then I'll put the cap on, put it in the fridge, and it's iced tea in the morning.
So you like iced
me acting beverages. Like I invented iced tea.
That sounds
really
good.
I put it in the fridge in the morning. It's cold. Have you heard of it?
Yeah. That sounds excellent.
It is very good.
Peach and dirt.
But it's only to avoid death.
By coffee?
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I'm sure that I'm addicted to caffeine in a bad way, because when I don't drink coffee or forget to, I get a headache. But anyway, I like to drink coffee before show. But if I'm drinking, which I think is fun, I'm still like, I like to have a drink before I perform. But I also feel like it's like I'll have a glass of white wine, or if I'm drinking like a whiskey soda or something, like half of it, because I drink frequently, but I feel like kind of a lightweight. So I can feel on stage when it's like too much. Like I can feel it in my like.
Yeah.
Mouth, or like in my facial, like my muscular movements or something. So I like a drink because I feel a little bit silly and loose or warmer. Mm-hmm. I think my favorite way to pregame is like water and like some caffeine and then a glass of white wine. And I recently was at the Philly Punchline, where I don't really drink Red Bull that much, but I just kind of felt like it all of a sudden. So I had a Red Bull because I did not feel like booze, and I don't know. There was like no coffee. Mm-hmm. So that was actually kind of interesting, because I drink so much coffee that I feel like I feel like I like the ceremony of coffee. It tastes really good. Mm-hmm. And I don't really think about how it affects me caffeine wise. But if I have another random, like a caffeinated beverage, it's another kind. Yeah. I'm like,
yeah, through the roof.
Yeah, but I don't think that's regular. My favorite way is like a glass of wine, I think.
What about like any mental, like how do you get, like, do you get nervous? A.
Yeah, okay.
B, like, how do you calm yourself down, or do you just not calm yourself down and get up there and just try to let it explode in the right direction?
I think I have three things to say. Okay.
Go on.
One is that, in terms of do I get nervous, almost weirdly, I feel like recently, this probably could be a bad thing. I don't think I've been feeling that nervous recently, but it depends, right? If it's a higher stakes,
stakes
show, I do feel nervous. And I recently, or it's like if there's a comedian that I respect and it's not even high stakes, but I just want to do well in front of this comedian friend or mentor or whatever, then I feel nervous. But I'm finding recently that I'm not feeling so nervous if it's, for example, like, like Britney is going to headline this show at a festival out of town for 30 minutes. I don't really feel nervous. I feel like I'm like clocking into work in a good way. I'm like, okay, I just have to think about it, but I'm okay.
That means I think that also like you've done the work, you've done the preparation.
I hope so.
There's a calm that comes with that.
I feel oddly calm. But I think it took a long time to get there.
Yes, but I think that just means you've done everything in your power to prepare.
Cool.
That's what I think. I don't know.
I appreciate that. And I hope that's true. And I feel so. And then the most recent time that I felt like nerves was, I got to open for Marc Maron in Idaho. And it was like a relatively last minute like arrangement. Mm-hmm. And I felt nerves. I almost felt a combination of confidence that I would do well, but the nerves came from socially meeting him. You know what I mean?
It's like two different things.
It really was. So they created in my body like the feeling of nerves that I felt like I was pacing around.
Yeah.
And actually that was kind of nice because I don't feel that often.
It's good because you get the friction, right?
Yeah.
And so when you get on the stage, like the explosion comes from like the friction, I think.
Yes. And I think that is good, which speaks to my other thing I was going to say, which is sometimes I've been feeling low energy. Mm-hmm. Like when you have, if it's like a weekend and I have to open for someone and it's like a few nights in a row and I'm feeling really drained or whatever. One time, the comedian Nick Thune, this was at Vermont Comedy Club years ago, he told me, I was like, I'm feeling low energy. And he said, try to hyperventilate. And so he did this activity where he tried to like hyperventilate, which I don't actually think works for me. But in trying that, I realized that what actually works for me, like, physically and mentally, is if I kind of make my body big, like if I'm just stretching backstage, it makes me feel confident and more focused. Mm-hmm. And then I always write, it helps me still, if it's a more important set, to write down at least how I'm going to start and end it. And like maybe the middle is like,
maybe a little banger opening line.
Yeah.
Just so you know, you got something to go up
there. I think that's how my brain works. Yeah. I have to write. So that's a part of my pre-gaming experience.
I do this thing, it's kind of embarrassing, where I like picture, and I don't even know anything about the ocean, right?
I love this.
But like, I like close my eyes and I like plunge beneath the ocean, right?
Oh.
And I find myself next to a blue whale. And I'm not the whale.
Is it cold? Or are you thinking about that? Okay.
It's cold, like down there, because I'm in the ocean.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's mad cold. And then I like am swimming next to a blue whale, right? But I'm not the whale.
Okay.
But I've just like, I'm with the whale. I'm with the whale. And I'm like, yo, the blue whale is the most majestic creature ever, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
Because it's mad rare and the biggest creature
it's
that's
so
ever
big.
Lived. It's like the biggest creature that ever lived. Like, what? And they're usually alone and they're rare and they never really hurt anybody. They're just like mad majestic. And so I just try to like, I be with the whale and I'm like, I have the power of the whale. Like, just be rare and majestic.
My God.
And then I come back up and then I do it and do my thing. And it could be like a presentation, a pitch.
Right.
Going on stage, whatever.
That feels so centering.
It is. And now I'm thinking like, should I get a tattoo of a blue whale?
Yeah, you should.
I dead ass.
Do you have tattoos? I don't have tattoos.
Nothing. Zero. Oh. Zero tattoos. But
you should.
Maybe the blue whale.
I really like that because I like how it's such a... Okay, here's why that's interesting. For anybody to like see that tattoo and really know what that's about, they have to have a real conversation with you.
Right.
And it means something, you know what I mean? I don't know if that's like why that's interesting, but it's something about it. And it's like for you, like I appreciate the idea of a tattoo being like your kind of like private interpretive experience.
Right.
Because it's like, that's why cool. would she have a tattoo of a blue whale? And like, that's yeah. the only one.
Right, right, right. I really like that.
But the thing about blue whales is they're kind of ugly. They're kind of busted. Oh, they're not the cutest whales.
Because they're like barnacles and stuff?
Yeah,
like,
they're not like, they're not, busted. They're kind of busted. Like, yeah, yeah, obviously the cutest whale when we think of cute whales is like the cartoon beluga whale.
Right, right, right. Because they like, have like a little face, forehead and like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you get this busted ass blue whale with like barnacles and like
right.
strange shape.
It's like a boat it's of a body.
And they're like 100 years old. Like oh for real. My like they God. Can live to like 90. Not the cutest. Wow. So
right, they've really seen some shit.
They've basically, yeah, they've seen it all.
Wow.
Yeah. And I don't know, have you ever seen like, I don't, this might not be your algorithm, but like a blue whale like oh. going under someone's boat out of nowhere?
I don't know. I haven't. I hope. I think that a lot of animals pop up on my algorithm, but not this necessarily.
What's your animal? What are we working with?
I think there's a lot of cat stuff on my algorithm. Cat, okay. A lot of cat stuff. A lot of like little critters. But you know, like little haunted creatures, like yeah, yeah, like different rent, like maybe a little mammal that's in Australia, like that
like
kind
what?
Of stuff,
like a marmalou. What's the thing called in Australia?
There's something called
marsupial.
A lot of marsupial stuff. Yeah, there's yeah. like a quokka. A quokka is like a little guy. I feel like I have a little fuzzy guys. That's okay. I don't know. I hope to that my algorithm essentially extends to. Like a whale traveling under a boat, because that feels like, whoa, yeah. like that's the kind of earthly thing that makes you like, yeah. what? They're so big and all the ocean is so powerful, but they like,
and you're like, navigate. Of all the creatures that I've been contacted by, the one that's not going to hurt you really. Because like, if you're right. going to be out on a kayak, which to be honest, the fuck are you doing out there?
I don't feel like I need to be
I
in
mean,
a kayak.
What would you be doing in the open ocean on a kayak? But then you right. see these videos of these people. And a random ass blue whale just goes under the kayak.
That's wild. Bah. And I feel like when people are on a boat and see whales or even dolphins, they really get excited. And I yeah. think it must be like, I mean, it's so wild that they're mammals even. Like,
crazy.
What? And we're like, we're connected in this way.
I know. Are you scared of the ocean or what's your feeling about the ocean?
I don't know that. Oh, okay. No, I don't think, I don't. No, I don't feel necessarily scared of the ocean. I feel like I feel pretty in awe of it. I think I like the ocean. I like swimming in the ocean, but I'm not like so bold that I'll go really far out. I feel like a confident swimmer, but I don't think I have a broader existential fear about the ocean. Sometimes when I think about it and its depth, you know, if you look on YouTube, there's like, okay,
this is a depth chart.
A depth chart. Yes. Those are nuts.
Terrifying.
I feel yes. more scared about outer space.
Okay.
I have existential fear.
I hear
space.
You.
Okay.
But here's the thing. I feel the same about both, but I think sea is more scary because it's possible that you would interact with that depth of the sea where it's very unlikely
Whoa,
that you would actually get the outer space experience.
Yes.
It's actually possible that you would be on a Carnival cruise line and take a spill and have to encounter
like pressure.
The horrors.
And like the pressure, actually, that is very scary. That is
it's
really
it's
interesting.
Possible.
Point. It's possible because it's in our literal
it's
realm.
It's in our realm of possibility, yeah. especially with these fucking cruise ships out there.
Yeah.
All the drama. I don't know what's going on with the submarines, the Titan.
Oh my gosh.
You know what I mean.
That was wild.
I mean, was it ever?
thinking about what I kept thinking about was like, well, the pressure. Was really wild to fathom.
At the end of the day, I think we could all agree the pressure was the saving grace because it was quick.
That's what I was asking my friends. Like, do you think that it was fast? Because I was like, the nightmare is like, whoa, what if it wasn't fast? But the pressure probably was so powerful that
it was
like
this. Like, imagine.
Like, crushing? Or like,
imagine a Pringles can just going.
Yeah, that is nuts.
So that's actually, at the end of the day, saving grace. Terrifying.
Good for them.
I mean, it was the only time like a 16-year-old kid would die, and everyone was like, "Yeah, fuck them. What were they doing down there in the first place?"
Oh my! I know, right? That is kind of wild. That just
and also because they were rich.
Family.
Yeah,
the
like,
rich thing.
Yeah.
And then you kept learning. I remember details. I wasn't like one of the people that really like read into it because it kind of freaked me out. But it was like the details would come out about it being such a shoddy operation in the first place.
Xbox
like
Xbox controller.
That's so. stupid beyond comprehension. I can't imagine it. So that's so wild, because only if you have so much wealth are you not really thinking logically about like you're not like honoring how powerful the ocean is, I guess.
Exactly. You're not honoring because if you have $1 billion,
yeah,
why would you think the ocean has anything on you?
Right.
I wouldn't if I had $1 billion.
Right.
But the ocean showed
up. You could pay your way through it.
Yeah.
But they.
It's like, can we call someone about this? Like, I have numbers.
Right. Also, the okay, this is a, so, what I also like appreciate about thinking in terms of the ocean is I really like thinking about how weird the guys are down deep, like how like evolutionarily like they're illuminated or like. Mm-hmm. Have, you know, like the deep sea creatures.
Because it's pitch really black down there.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I think that's really fascinating.
It is. And they have a whole life that we'll never know about.
That is wild that it's actually, and that yet it's on Earth.
Now, what do you think about, now here we go. Okay, ocean. Aliens at the bottom of the ocean, they say.
Like ancient civilizations, earthly.
Unearthly creatures, like coming from the bottom of the ocean. I don't know too much about
interesting.
It. Mike, chime in if you do, but I don't know if you do.
I've never actually heard that. I've never heard that like idea.
Okay, so what's your stance on like UFOs, aliens, otherworldly things?
Okay, here's my stance, or here's what I feel. Here's like, I'm going to try to summarize it concisely. Yeah. I feel that probably there is some other form of energy in mm-hmm. the cosmos. Mm-hmm. But I think that it's very possible it presents itself in a way that humans can't perceive.
Okay.
Like light or I don't know. That's how I feel today.
Okay.
And then, but I feel more like, I feel like very open to not knowing. And I feel like I'm like a, you know how when people talk about faith and they talk about being like an agnostic?
Yes.
I'm like that about aliens.
Agnostic is
like
atheist is atheist doesn't is like, exist no. And agnostic is like,
it's like I don't know. Yeah, I think that's how I feel in terms of our other life forms. I think that I feel we might not even perceive that as life. That's like what I'm feeling today and
I think that's the smartest take to have on it. I think that's actually the smartest take to have on most things. Like an agnostic take. Like,
sure.
Could be, could not be.
Because I think of strength in just question. It doesn't, not everything has to be an answer. It could, like, questioning is like something that humans can do uniquely.
Right.
As we try to make sense of our world, right? Mm-hmm. So, okay, what are you feeling about that? And how do you feel about this ocean idea?
Well, the reason I was thinking about it was because there was that, the famous congressional hearing like 6 months ago, maybe last summer, where this military person was describing all these military guys on a base, naval guys, off of, I believe, like San Diego or something out there somewhere, out in the ocean, all the military boys, I don't know, they're in the planes or in the boats, and they sighted this object that they described as not possible as being like from our world or like from our capabilities of anything that we know about. Fast moving, like the way it would move and stop and go up and down is not a technology.
Like the physics or whatever.
Don't make sense for what we understand.
Interesting.
And so, and then they described this craft kind of hovering over the ocean where there was a calm, completely calm ocean, but there were these white caps, which means...
What does that mean?
The white caps are when there's a disturbance, so like a wave, basically.
I see.
So it's like a completely calm ocean and then this little pocket of white caps.
Whoa.
And the thing was hovering over it, which kind of lends itself to this theory. It's not even a theory. I don't even know. I saw it on Netflix. that there's... that the otherworldly things are not coming from up there, but they're coming from under the ocean.
So it's like something is stirring.
Something is a stirring. And so whatever that little craft was actually came from the ocean and not from outer space.
Whoa.
And it's just fun to think about.
I think that's really fun.
It's just fun to get involved.
Yeah.
It's like, do I really believe it? Would I bet money on it? Not really, but it's just fun to hear the theories.
Yeah, that's really compelling. I hadn't heard about that. And the thing that really interests me is how the movement is different from like things that we get.
Yes. Or like not physiologically like, possible, because we only understand crafts that are propelled.
Oh, basically. Okay.
And
okay.
So these things that they're witnessing out over the ocean can stop with no, and then go with no propulsion, go up, go down, like drop.
Interesting.
Go back. And that's apparently not something that we know. But then I go, well, we don't know what we know, because right. we don't know what type of fuck shit is going on with all the secret programs they have. Like, we didn't in the 30s and 40s, like, they didn't know that we could do the atom bomb, but we were building yeah. it. Like, somebody, it could be like our own stuff that yeah. we're working on that just the military doesn't even know about.
Right. Right. And that's really fascinating.
And then there's like, I read a book about Area 51.
Okay.
I read 100 pages out of 700. Yeah.
That's, so honestly, today, limited that's knowledge. The book. That's all right. Like, cool.
And they were saying that like our government at Area 51 is reverse engineering these crafts.
Okay.
So basically they've discovered these crafts from going back hundreds of years, right? And we're trying to reverse engineer the physics of how they would have made these things.
I see. Wow.
But do I believe that? I don't know. It's just kind of fun.
Yeah. Because
at the end of the day, there's only so much entertainment in Williamsburg, Brooklyn to think about.
Yeah, that's like, true. Is there a movie about alien contact that you watched or that you like or think is interesting? Or like an interesting depiction of that? I don't know that I've seen that many.
I don't think I've seen any.
I watched Nope, which I liked. That was like the...
Yes, I didn't even watch it. Okay.
Oh, I liked... Good? Yeah, I guess I liked it. I liked it. And I have this thing where I think I'm pretty impressionable because I feel like I don't make it... I love film, but I'm not like a big movie buff and yeah. I don't watch them every like week or whatever. Mm-hmm. Some people are really good about winding down with a movie or tapping into a series. I'm yeah, not.
Not that.
So when I watch a really high production movie... I'll get really
you're
like...
You're blown away.
Wow, it's another world. Like
yeah. You watch Top Gun, you're like, I'm yeah, blown away.
I'm serious. I watched Top Gun. I really... And when I went to watch that recent Top Gun, when, like 2 years ago,
yeah.
I'm not particularly interested in action movies, but at the time it was like a guy that... Whatever. So I like watched Top Gun because I was like going, you know, to make an impression.
Yeah, of course.
And I was like, wow. Like, that always happens to me. So for Nope, I really was intrigued by the depiction of like alien life form. Anyway, so that was like interesting and unsettling.
Love it.
It makes me think. Yeah.
Beautiful. Want to take one more call? What do we got, Mikey? We're obsessed with that.
Okay, so my question is, I saw a poll on Instagram last night where someone said, hey, this may offend some people, but if you're in a long-term relationship and you can't have regular bodily functions in front of your significant other, then it's not a real relationship.
Okay.
And then said, like, check if you agree with me or not. So she was stating her stance of, like, that's not a relationship.
I think we got the question.
You can't do that.
No disrespect. Okay. Thank you to our call-in. So I think they were saying, if you can't fart and poop in front of your significant other, is it a real relationship?
Okay.
I have a thought, but go ahead.
I have two thoughts, but go ahead.
My thought would be there are different kinds of relationships. I think once you start, it becomes a different kind of relationship. It becomes a family.
Yes.
But it might be the end of the mystery phase. And that's actually how you have a family.
It's
the end of the mystery phase and the beginning of your family phase. And both things are rewarding, but they're just different types of relationships.
I was thinking that really summarizes what I, like the two kind of like thought clouds I was having as she was speaking, because I don't think that individually and in my relationships that I've ever felt comfortable. I'm like too shy, but I know that like I have many friends that don't care about that. I just like I'm shy about it or something, or I'm having it's like a internalized like misogynistic thing about being a lady, like whatever.
Yeah.
I don't think that I've ever felt comfortable. But then immediately I thought about my parents, who are like in the early 70s and they
still together.
Yep. You know, they've been family at this point, I guess, for at least. Wait, they got married when they were in their early 30s. So the point is, like, they've been family for so much longer than they've been, like, courting, right? And they obviously fart and shit around each other. I mean, they have to. It's part of family. It's part of managing. It's part of life, part of life. And it's part of, like, managing your body with a family member. And they're so comfortable, obviously, just, like, talking about that or whatever, you know, or, like, and... Yeah, that's just must just happen so quickly.
Yeah.
What about you?
I think everybody wants to stay in the
like
mystery phase forever. And you can't, because it's going to end one way or another. And either you're going to stay with the person or you're not. I mean, I've been in an eight-year relationship.
You've been in an eight-year relationship?
Yes. And so, of course, we've seen it all.
Of course. It's like, because it's a human body.
Like but it becomes like a different thing. It's like we're just like, it's like an R. Like,
yeah, right.
Or, you know, it's like a family.
Well, I have something to say too. I think peeing is different. I think peeing.
Oh, that's not even considered.
It's kind of cute.
Peeing is not even being considered. Because,
like,
yeah.
I'm a little shy about that, but I'm losing my. I'm like,
that's
whatever.
No,
it's like the idea of peeing while someone you're dating is like not necessarily talking to the bathroom, although that happens all the time, but like they're maybe like the door is open and they're like, you're like laughing or talking about something. It's like a different level. That's, it's almost more like, like, oh, we're kind of being intimate and silly. And it's like, yeah, I think fecal matter and like farting.
It's different.
It's a new level of intimacy.
Pee is like just this.
Yeah,
pee is
yeah,
just
yeah.
like a fun water.
Yeah, it is.
Pee is a fun water.
Right. And like,
it's just different.
It's kind of like if you shower with somebody. This happened once when I was younger in my 20s, but I didn't particularly like it. But he was like, as a funny thing, was like peeing while we were taking a shower. Yeah. It wasn't like something that I thought was like that charming or funny, but I was like, okay, haha.
But it's like, also not like scandalous.
No,
it's
I like didn't really care. Yeah, it was not like, an ick. Of course, it was not an ick.
Peeing is like a tear. It's like, okay.
Yeah.
It's nothing.
I think it's funny when, like, I dated somebody who really had a lot of, like just kind of, you know, issues with IBS or whatever. And he was pretty funny about it and open.
Respect.
And would, like, yeah, and, like, would joke about it a lot and was really comfortable and funny, like, discussing it with me. But yeah. He never, like, the boundary was he never, like, let me encounter that.
Of course. Yes, of course. So, yeah, I think that's the answer, folks. It is a real relationship without that, but there are stages and levels of relationships. And once you start pissing and pooping and farting and shitting in front of someone,
your family.
You're set. Hey, it's like the Olive Garden when you're here. Your family. Well, this has been an absolutely awesome time. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you for having me. This was so good.
All right. So, tell them what the special is called in the emphasis you want to say it in.
Okay. That is my horse.
Okay.
That is my horse on YouTube for free by Brittany Carney coming out on the 5th. So
that's like someone took your horse and you're saying, that is my horse.
That's like, Yeah, exactly. Yes.
All right. Check out That Is My Horse on YouTube. I'll see you guys next week. Drop a comment. Do all the vibes. I love you very much. Oh, and call us. Now we have a phone number. We're the first people in history
What's
to do
the number?
It. Off the top of my head.
347-722-1487.
Okay.
The number
one,
to call.
Okay. 347-PACK-1-GUS. All right. See you later.
Thank you.
I won't let my active psoriatic arthritis joint symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. Tremfya guselkumab is proven to significantly reduce joint pain, stiffness, and swelling in adults with active psoriatic arthritis. Some patients even reported less fatigue as assessed by survey 1 week prior. Results may vary. Tremfya is taken by injection 6 times a year after 2 starter doses at week 0 and 4.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
Hey, parents. Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list, teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity. Set up chores and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.